Good morning to you.
Good
morning. I want to give you a little update on what we did. I don't see David here. He was out greeting, and he's a chaplain. We had an opportunity to go and speak with the chaplains for Thursday, with 8 hour of talking, and so it really drains on you after a while. But the way that we were impressed, Reed and I was impressed with those men and women that are there to know what's out in the hospitals and what they're doing. You know, I thought about every Sabbath we ask prayer. We know what that has done. But when you hear prayer from those chaplains, and when you hear what happens as a result of prayer, and to know that you don't even have to be there for there to be an impact with prayer. And there is one incident where the lady was near the point of death, and one of the chaplains went up, and she was in a coma, and he just went up. No, it was a lady that went up and sat there by her. And we're just praying for that lady as she was there. And she began, this lady was hyperventilating. And so she just began doing an exercise. And she was able to, as a result of that, and the presence, to have such a profound impact on that lady. And she didn't even know she was being prayed for. She had no idea anyone was there. And to see the physiological response, where the nurses responded afterwards, said something really, really powerful has happened. And so when we realize what prayer does, and one of the things that I was talking about was the ministry of the presence. David was there. It's a wonderful group, and I was just commenting about that. Part of what I was dealing with was the ministry of the presence, and that is, what does our personal presence in someone's presence, what does that do? What comes along with that? Well, I did a couple of demonstrations to help them understand what is going on. And, you know, it just, it was very rewarding for them because they had no idea, several of them had no idea, of the impact, the positive impact that we have upon people. When Jesus says that when you know me and you're attached to me, that there is life that flows from you. He calls us the light of the world. He calls us that rivers of living water will come forth from us. And we're going to see that more and more. And today we're going to be dealing with the association with Christ, the partnership with Christ. And what does that have to do with us? When you look at the whole Sabbath School quarterly that we've been dealing with, we've been focusing on emotions. And we've done Sabbath School lessons on the health message. And it's so easy to get those things confused with salvation. So I want to state very clearly that what we're talking about is not an alternative to being saved. Psychology, good psychology, psychological thinking, has no impact on the fact that we are saved. Nor does the health message have an impact on the fact that we are saved. Both of them are a consequence of a gift that God has given. Not only will salvation impact us, and we're going to go through that in just a little bit, not only will it impact us in the direction in our life and what we find that we do, the very first response that I had when I fell on my knees and I accepted Christ was this absolute, it's never been reproduced in my life, the exhilaration that I sensed of how valuable that I am to Him. And immediately That's one of the very first things. I knew nothing about religion whatsoever. But the impact that that had of how he saw me, and one of the first things I wanted to do, I wanted to get off my knees, and this was almost midnight when this happened. We just had a baby girl, and the question in my mind was, what am I going to give this child? Is she going to turn out like some of the girls that I have seen in high school? And I was terrified. What am I going to give her? And then I just happened to turn on the television, and up came Billy Graham. By, you know, just cursory knowledge that Billy Graham existed. But I really had my attention. And, you know, sometimes you think that God causes the whole world to align for you. And it almost felt like that there. I had a teachable moment. And at that moment, the second I turned on that television, up came Billy Graham. And he has a non-intrusive, non-forceful way of presenting things. And he caught my attention. I had never to that point ever sat and listened to a religious meeting, a television broadcast. I never ever remembered that. And it's so funny. When I came in and became a Seventh-day Adventist, I heard about, not Faith for Today, Voice of Prophecy. Well, I remember as a little child, I'd lie on the couch and listen to some music and stuff, and then all of a sudden, lift up the trumpet and loud let it ring. Well, I remember hearing that. I really didn't know what it was about. But that teachable moment that I had, on came Billy Graham. And what he was talking about was so inviting. And before I knew it, I found myself on my knees in front of that television accepting his invitation. And he looked right at that camera, and I know that the whole world disappeared, and he was just looking at me, eyeball to eyeball, and invited me. And I found myself falling on my knees. I'd never done that before. And I found myself accepting. And the exhilaration that there was when I realized the value of who I am and what he has done. So I wanted to get in my car and I wanted to go down middle of Eureka, California, stand on the highest building I could and just start screaming. Guess what I found out? And it's just amazing. Just his presence in your life. What happens? And then when you're in the presence of another human being, we don't realize when he says, you shall be the light of the world. Out of your belly shall flow rivers of living water. There is an incredible positive effect that we have on other people. And today we're talking about partnership with Christ. Well, we've been talking about emotions the whole quarter. That God has emotions, that human beings have emotions, and there are right ways and wrong ways that those things impact us. But there is nothing bad about being a human being and having these emotions. Well, God is very much familiar with that. And God knows exactly what causes tears to fall and what causes the pain inside of us. And I love it when I give my heart to Him that He would just come in and make a clean sweep and do like He did with the cleansing of the temple. He'd come in there and, man, dirty animals and all kinds of things flying all over the place, and everything would be cleaned at one time. He just doesn't do that. Doesn't do that. We're not robots. He does not try to have us have the kind of experience with Him where we become brain dead. He knows what's here. He planted it there. He wants us to reason together with Him. And when He comes into my presence, I'm going to share with you this morning, how He gets our attention and what do we do. And so this partnership with Christ, I think it's extremely important. And how that impacts us, inside, how that impacts our emotions and the kind of evangelism that God really has in mind for us. that is, you know, many times we felt like we have to go out and be a street preacher, or we have to go door to door and pass out literature, and done a lot of that. But I find out that the most powerful thing that you have is a connection with Christ, and you are as consistent inside as you are outside, that you allow those things to be a part of your life, and the impact that that leaves on people. So, this week we were talking about partnership with Christ and the benefit of religion in people's lives. There are several studies that are going on now. It awakened, I don't know exactly when, but it's only been a few years, that scientific researchers, doesn't mean that they're religious at all, going in and trying to find out, what is this factor of religiosity, spirituality? What is the impact that that has on human beings? And so they're doing it from a completely objective standpoint. The conclusion, with every study I know that I've been exposed to and that I have read, is that it always has a very powerful influence. And almost always, it's positive. So not only is it positive upon me, it's positive on other people as we come into their presence. And so some of the things that just having a belief, what it does for us, all kinds of things. They say in the health realm, we're not hit and riddled with as many of the diseases that are in the general population, that generally when a person gets a cold or something, it's like they're getting fewer of those and they last less time than other people. And, you know, what is that? Is that God doing something for us? Well, we find out that there is something that God does to impact our life, impacts our attitude so much. They did a study, and it's called the nocebo study. The nocebo study. You've heard of placebo. Well, the placebo is that in every drug trial that they have, they always know that there are going to be a certain amount of people that respond to a sugar pill thinking that it's a powerful medicine. And the figure is around 26% of the people that take sugar pills are going to get the same kind of reaction as if they were taking the medicine. So one of the big studies and emphasis that they're trying to do now is to understand, what is this placebo thing? How does it work? How do we capitalize on that? Well, they did a nocebo effect, trying to understand if a person thinks they're getting a sugar pill and in reality they're getting the real medicine and they are told they're getting a sugar pill, guess what happens? No impact, no significant impact on the person at all. Whoa, wait a minute. Did they find a key in understanding what the placebo is about? I remember a statement where Ellen White says, if you think your food is going to hurt you, it's what? It's going to hurt you. Oh, wait a minute. What is this health message thing about? You know, you can, and I'm not advocating what I'm going to say next, but they find out that there are blue zones in the United States. They look at these blue zones, and the blue zone indicates that there are people there whose health and the effect of their lifestyle does not gel with what's the national norm. For instance, they see that diet impacts people and you should eat this and this and this and eat this way and that way. Well, there are several groups, blue zones in the United States, where people have Several of them have come over from a foreign country, established a group here, and they maintain their customs and their ways of living and so on, and find out that they defy all norms for health. They eat everything we list as unhealthy. Their diet, it's almost shameful. Well, they don't have fast food because they cook it all. And they're wondering, well, why is that? What is it about their lifestyle that defies all of these statistics? Is it a genetic thing or what is happening? Well, they're trying to reproduce some of these things. And I think I mentioned in here one of the discoveries they made was that 40%, and one study said 90% of all the placebo receptor sites are in the stomach. Well, what does that mean? It doesn't aid in digestion. It has nothing to do with digestion. But they're finding out, and one other researcher said, I think there's about 90% of all the receptor sites for serotonin. Well, we've been told that serotonin is that neurotransmitter for well-being, a sense of well-being, of happiness, and so on. Well, what are they doing in the stomach? And they don't aid in digestion at all. Well, now they're discovering that that is one of the reasons why these blue zones are so different. Tell me, the very first thing that pops in your mind, what is the one meal of the year that you remember most?
Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. Well, what goes on in Thanksgiving? Usually we have a big spread of all kinds of food and most of it's not healthy. But yet we have this overwhelming sense of well-being. Well, what is generally there with that meal? All kinds of friends. You're making contact. You're talking with people. And so what they found out in the blue zones is that the main emphasis, every time that they eat in a way that they did back there. A lot of socialization, and their meals are built around. They never have the television on or anything like this. They fellowship while they eat. And we understand the designer made us that way. That sense of well-being, that food is not the thing necessarily that gives you that sense of well-being. It's another person's presence while you're eating that food. And in today's society, we see a lot of people eating solo. We see those people eating fast food, and we're trying to blame it on the fast food. Fact of the matter is, that's secondary to what goes on. Meals were always intended to be eaten in association with other people. And the impact that that has on us is really profound. So we're looking at the effect of religion. Now they're finding out that religion by itself has some benefits in physical health. But they're finding out that the individuals who have a belief system that is in harmony with what they feel that the Lord wants them to do, this spiritual connection with God, and they find out that with that spiritual connection with God, and they see that this is primary in their life, the benefits are significantly greater. The rewards are significantly greater. Well, what kind, you know, they didn't take any particular religion. They took all people who claimed to be religious, compared it to people who didn't claim to be religious. And there's such a significant difference. And it didn't matter about the level of dedication as far as what religion you were in. It was the degree of dedication to that belief system. They were the ones significantly benefited. Now when you start thinking of that, you start thinking about, There are a lot of religions I know that people have a belief system that has caused them to do some pretty weird things. Is that part of this? We think of such things as what happened down to Waco and Jamestown, and we could go on with some of these individuals, and we think, well, is that what they're talking about? We would like to think that all the studies came down and said, born again, Seventh-day Adventist, top the list. Well, we haven't really found that in the studies. And they did individual studies on separate religions. But they found out that those who felt like they had an abiding connection with God, that they fared much better when there was illness. They had more robust health, and they had far less psychological problems. Well, that's incredible. But I want to introduce you to something. They found out, and it's becoming more and more an object of research, that there are four major attachment styles that a child will have when it's born. And that attachment style begins almost instantly when that child comes in eyeball to eyeball with that mother. That mother's response in that second sets that child up for an attachment style that will last the rest of their life. And it's reinforced if that mother continues that type of style. And there ends up there are about four different ones. The most hurtful one is one called the disorganized. A disorganized attachment style. There's a secure one, there's the anxious one, there's the, off the top of my head, I'll get the avoidant one. But there is the disorganized one. 15% of all children born in the United States have a disorganized type of attachment. And it doesn't matter about the economic or ethnic background. The number one factor is if the parents have had trauma in their life and they have never resolved it, they then are going to have, the child's going to have the greatest chance of having a disorganized style. Well, what is that? 15%. Now, no one's, by test or by research, has made this connection, but several researchers says there has to be a connection. 15% of all people born in this world have a disorganized attachment disorder. The other figure that they see is that 15% of all adults have psychopathic or serious psychological problems. Now they're trying to find out, is there a coordination between those two? And they're doing research now to see if that's what happens. And the fact that there are 15% of them, when they become an adult, they find out that they're far more vulnerable to all of these psychological problems. Well, a disorganized attachment disorder, let me read to you just a couple of the symptoms and the summary this one researcher had about what are the signs, what do they have. And what my objective is, I'd like to show you the connection between that and a church and a religion. So here are the signs. Although disorganized attachment behaviors are most easily defined in opposition to organized attachment strategies, that is, they're trying to compare these people with a disorganized attachment style with those that have an organized one. That is, they're trying to see long-term results. What are the effects that this has on people? Contradictory behavior. misdirected or stereotypical behavior, stilling and freezing for a substantial amount of time, and direct apprehension or even fear of the parent are behavioral indices of disorganized attachment, in particular when they occur in stressful circumstances in the presence of the parent with a sufficient degree of intensity. So they notice that these things that are going on, how this disorganized style begins is when a child is in a stressful situation. Can the mother, can the parent respond to the child in a nurturing way? Reva put it in a real good way this morning as we were talking about it, that the parent who has all of these issues still in their life are not going to be emotionally available to that child. In fact, they will see many of the things a child is going through that reminds them their own experience, and they are flooded with all of these memories that they have. And so this is one of the most harmful things when it comes to parenting. And thank God that He made this brain the way He did, that it can repair itself under the right conditions. So the child then is in a frozen position. It can't go this way because the source of peace is dangerous. And it tries to go this way, but the fear of leaving and not attaching to that parent, that is a life and death struggle. This is a life and death threat. So it's frozen. There is no source of comfort. The child then doesn't know how to comfort itself. Temperament has no influence on this. It doesn't matter what the temperament is. It depends upon the parent's reaction to that child. Now, freezing means that the child, unable to choose between seeking proximity to their caregiver or avoiding the parent, stops moving for several moments as if in trance and dissociated from the regular thought processes. Have you heard of a dissociative disorder? We call it multiple personality disorders. This is where it comes from. That in order to deal with the pain, the child has to create another reality. It doesn't matter if it's sexual or if it is physical abuse. So the child has to find comfort, can't find it in its caregiver, can't leave the caregiver, therefore the child freezes. And in order to soothe itself, it escapes reality and creates a new reality for itself. You talk about pathetic, and when you see those precious people come in and they have those conditions, it is just, it's really sad. Apprehension means showing fear of the parent immediately upon return after a brief separation. For example, by hand-to-mouth movement. The child is just going like this, doesn't know what to do. So when the parent, they have a strange situation experiment where the parent brings a child in and then the parent leaves and leaves the child with a stranger. That's not what they're after. After they're gone 3 minutes, the parent comes back and they look at the child's response to the parent's absence. An avoidant will avoid for a while and become angry. A secure one will greet them and then involve them in their play. But a child that is disorganized will freeze in their spot and can't move. Horrible, horrible impact upon this child. Disorganized attachment behaviors are not just bizarre and incoherent. They are considered to be indicators of an experience of stress and anxiety which a child cannot resolve because the parent is at the same time the source of fright as well as the only potential haven of safety. In the face of this paradoxical situation, the infant's organized strategy to deal with stress is expected to fall apart. Here is the essence. The essence of disorganized attachment is fright without solution. Now, what does that have to do with our emotions and abiding in Jesus? If you pass before an adult that the only way to get out of this earth and to have life eternal is through this church or that church or connection with God, and then you portray a God who is so untrustworthy, vicious, vindictive, dogmatic, this is where, not this circumstance, a disorganized attachment style is where schizophrenia, many, it causes a schizophrenia. Now, they're still researching that. They're seeing a lot of these situations that are going on. So, is it possible that we could, as a church, be presenting something to our people about the necessity of going to heaven, terrifying them with hellfire? What have we done to our children? Some of you have gone through this. You better make sure that you're not in a tavern or a movie theater or somewhere bad, because if you are and your name comes up in judgment, what happens? Anybody ever hear that? So what motivates them? Fear. So here's an identical situation where fear is the driving force. But the one that's supposed to soothe us and comfort us is so unpredictable, so judgmental, I don't dare go to him. So they freeze. They're not going to go out and witness. They will warm a pew, and this is not a criticism. This is not a sense of judgment. This is a situation that we have created. And it's not only in the Adventist church. We are creating just what I described for you. Well, how do we... Yes, Skip.
There was an article in the newspaper. I think it was a Baptist preacher of a 10,000 member congregation that was fired because he finally found out the truth about the state of the dead and started preaching that there was no hell, and they fired him.
Hmm. And you think of the impact.
Anyone else read that? But
yeah. You think of the impact on that. Oh, yeah, that's Skip Bell or whatever his name. Bill? Yeah. Rob Bell? They also, yeah. That first name is significant. They also published a story about a preacher that the little girl, her mother died. She was about six. I think she was 6 years old. And the preacher looked down at the little girl sitting on the front row crying and saying, Jesus took your mother. Your mother's with Jesus. What kind of sense does that make in a little child's mind? She hates God. Terrified of God. So what are we presenting? That is the driving force. I just see more and more of these kind of evidences that helps me to understand what drives me to get out and to try to announce to people that God can be trusted. Did I see your hand, Trent?
Well, sir, I told you I have a bizarre story.
Oh. No, you can't come up here and tell it.
I'm not interested in it. I don't think I can get through it there now. But anyway, yesterday, this is just one part of the story. Yesterday, I was on an airplane coming back from North Carolina, and the guy in the seat next to me started telling me about how he raised his son and the mistakes that he thought he made, and this and that and the other thing. So during the course of our conversation, I told him, I said, you know, I'm not a parent, but I think probably the best thing any parent can do is introduce their child to God and hope that God takes them from there.
Mm-hmm.
And then he told me, he said, you know something? He said, I think you're right. He said, but my son went in the Navy, and he talked about how the Navy was the best thing that happened to his son. He came back about 2 months later, and he said he told us that he wanted to become a Seventh-day Adventist. Well, this is just one part of a week-long story, sir.
Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, he said, he said, Dad, you know that the Sabbath is the right day to go to church and all. And the guy told me, he said, you know, he said, I just told my son. He said, now those Seventh-day Adventists just don't have it right. He said, they're too worried about whether they're following the rules and all this and that.
Wow.
And so anyway, I had to turn the oxygen thing up a little higher.
So was he willing to throw you out whenever he found you were an Adventist?
Well, I just basically told him. I said, you know, I said, it's really a shame that the Adventist Church has that kind of a reputation.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but the bottom line is, it's all about the love of God.
That's right.
And so anyway, we got off the plane and he followed me through the whole terminal and everything.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. What does it mean then to abide in Christ? You can't abide in someone that you're not attached to. You can't just lay a trimming from a grapevine, just throw it on the ground there and have that thing attach. When we are attached to the Lord, what happens? Well, Jesus was trying to define what religion would look like after he got through with 3.5 years of ministry. And where did he set down that premise, those conditions? He brought all the people together. He set them down on the side of a hill, and he began speaking. Blessed are the... And so Jesus announces the Beatitudes of what will happen to you as a result of abiding in Him. And what did He do at the very end? The disciples said, Lord, You've wiped away everything that we have known as religion. What is left? Now, they were talking about this in their own mind. They were discussing it back and forth, but they never announced it to Jesus because Jesus debunked all of the behavior that he saw in the leaders. Jesus had wiped away everything that they had known as religion. And so he came to them and said, you must be wondering what religion is going to look like. They said, yes. He said, let me tell you something. I'm not going to try to describe something here. What I want to do is I want to go down to the end of time. And when I set up my throne to separate the sheep from the goats, I want you to know what the one question is that I will be asking. And the first question that pops in our mind, do you love God? He never mentions that. It says, when the Son of Man comes in the clouds of glory and establishes his throne, divides the sheep from the goats. One question. When truth entered your mind, what did it do? Your attitude about yourself. What did it do to your heart? And how did it affect how you see yourself and see another human being? That's it. Paul picks it up over in Galatians 5, 13, 14, 15, and said, listen, Galatians, they were curious about this law. He says, the whole fulfillment of the law, and he uses the word Torah, which means everything God said, everything God did. He said everything that God was doing had one purpose in mind. When you come to the place that you love and respect yourself and treat your neighbor as you would yourself, he says the gospel is through. Now, what does that have to do with our health message? Jesus is not trying to clean us up so that we can have him live with us. He's not trying to make us psychologically sound so that we're not a bunch of nuts running around. Jesus enters our life, and he created in me a desire to come alive. He says, I've come to bring you life and to bring you abundant life. Abundant life wasn't in long terms. Abundant life was the quality of life this second. He wants me to be fully alive this second. He wants me to be fully free this second. He wants me to be fully human this second. And he wants me to be as consistent on the outside as I am on the inside. He wants that relationship to be so honest and so beautiful inside that as you get to know him, you find there is just something so intriguing about knowing him. Something so delicious about knowing him. Something so fulfilling about knowing him. And I find that the entire thrust of every time I open that Bible, that is the one question that I'm asking. What is this telling me about my Father? He says, ask me. I'm standing on tiptoes trying to find those to whom I can reveal myself. Ask me. I will come and I'll make my abode with you. I will have my presence with you. And as a result, we will walk together. One of my favorite quotes is on the back cover of that book, The Snatch from the Jaws of the Enemy, is in Psalm 87, where it says, we're walking along the path, and when God comes and makes his his house with me, his presence with him, it says, my heart then becomes a path for him to travel, and he never gets off. And he goes with us when we go down in the desert. He goes with us when we go through the storm, and goes with us as we go up through the mountain. And it says that the path winds around, and pretty soon we round a bend, and behold, there's Zion. Never gets off. That's what abiding does. You learn to trust him and love him more and more and more. And you discover there's not one standard that God says you have to meet in order to be in heaven. Now there's a whole boatload of things that he says, benefits that will happen as a result. I'm going to want to not have other gods before me. I'm going to want to worship him. I'm going to not want to hurt people. I don't want to steal. I don't want to do those things. All of those are benefits. All of these things are promises of what will happen to me as a result of abiding in him. So everything you see in Scripture that we have been told is a criteria for getting to heaven. It's been written as a gift. When you know me, the way you will know that you're abiding in me is that all of these things will begin to be reproduced in your life. And you'll find such a pleasant experience being with the Lord. Let's pray. Father in heaven, I thank you so much for the beautiful experience that we've had of trying to understand the eternal, internal working of the human being and the way that you have created us with all of these emotions and the way to be able to enjoy life, and that our emotions are there to bring joy and fulfillment. They're also there to give us protection. And I thank you so much that you walk within us, talk with us, and that not one thing in your mind is there to harm or hurt or put pressure on. We know that in the Bible there is a list of emotions, the full range of emotions that every human being feels, that you feel. You tell us about being jealous. You tell us about being fearful. You tell us about being angry. You tell us all of these things. Man takes these emotions and either destroys himself or other people. Those emotions in you always drives you to love, to heal. I thank you so much, Father, that you are so jealous over me that you do not want to have any other false god known in me, because you want my full attention, you want my fellowship. Thank you so much for what you do. And again, I want to surrender my heart to you. I want to open up my life and invite you to please come make your abode with me, that we may have that fellowship. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.